This is your host, Trevor Caritson. As always, my co-host, Steve Smee, is joining me.
Hey, what's going on?
We've got another really good guest lined up for you guys. Joining us today is IFBB Pro Colette Nelson. Now, Colette, you have so many letters behind your name. I'm not even going to begin to try to introduce you properly, so I'm going to let you do the honors.
Okay, so I have an MS, so that's a Master's in Clinical Nutrition. I'm a registered dietitian. And I'm a board certified diabetes educator. I'm finishing up my RN, and soon there'll be a nurse practitioner at the end of my name, because I want to save. I think my dream is actually to specialize in saving all my bodybuilders out there that have actually ended up using, we'll talk about this, but history of growth hormone use, stimulant use, can actually lead to diet, carb, binge eating, can actually lead to beta cell failure. So what I want to talk about a little bit today too, is we're really talking about insulin, but why that message is so important to me and why eventually I'll be having my own practice someday soon.
Before we get into that, Colette, I got one question for you. Can you cook as well?
What was that?
Can you cook?
I can cook.
Oh my goodness, guys. There's the perfect woman for you. What don't you want?
Thank you. I've never been married. What's going on here?
Well,
hey, I cook. I'm the cooker in my relationship, man. My girlfriend doesn't kick shit.
Really?
I'm the person who cooks. Steve, and I like it that way because I'm picky.
Steve, I already told you, Steve, friends only. We've had this conversation. So, Colette, we were talking a little bit off air about insulin and anti-aging. I would love for our listeners, just to kind of go on like a 10, 15 minute rant on your thoughts on insulin and how it affects aging.
So really, when you think about the glycosylated end products, and this is the issues involved with high sugar. And high sugar, I just want to let everybody know, when the diabetes world think of normal sugar as 70 to 120, that's what probably everybody out there thinks, right? But really, we want to keep our blood sugars under 100. That's really the goal. And fasting sugars should be between 75 and 85. So I urge every one of you that's listening to this today that really should get a glucose meter. It costs nothing. And we'll talk about this because I want to give you some of my ideas, because there's very inexpensive glucose meters out there. So everybody can do this. There's really no excuse. And really look at where their fasting is. So when you start having fasting blood sugars over 100, you are starting what we call these glycosylated end products. All right. And what they're doing is it's basically glucose collecting on your red blood cell. So if this happens over time, basically at the end of the day, this is circulating throughout your whole body, and it's killing your neurons. And if you're doing that in your brain, there's a lot of theory that there's insulin type 3 now, just so everybody knows. And that's basically diabetes in the brain, and that's Alzheimer's. And they're actually using clinical trials to use insulin. You don't have diabetes, but do you have diabetes? Because what do we distinguish as diabetes? I will tell you that I'm seeing bodybuilders epidemiological level that have high fasting sugars. So if we could use insulin earlier, now this sounds really prolific. You use insulin to prevent diabetes. And this isn't something that I'm making up. This is actually, there are trials that are being done. There's trials that have been done, like the Origin trial. So what you're trying to do is you're actually trying to keep your fasting blood sugar under 100. You're trying to keep your deviation between when you eat and what your blood sugar does less than 10. It's not going to move more than 10 to 15 points. And by doing that, you're not having all these N-glycosylated products and ending up on your red blood cells circulating through your body, damaging the neurons, damaging your circulatory system, damaging your heart, your kidney, your liver, your muscle cells, your eyes. Every single cell in your body is affected by glucose. So it is, to me, one of the number one reasons why our bodies are aging. So in fact, anti-aging specialists are starting it by the time you're 35, we already know that you're losing growth hormone, estrogen, progesterone. I mean, all the different, we've talked about this. We know this, that the hormone theory, and nobody talks about insulin. No one says a word about insulin. I mean, we hear it in the body world, and I don't actually agree with the way people use insulin in bodybuilding. I think they're not thinking clearly, and people that have listened to me speak, it's so logical what we're going to talk about today, Trevor. It's so logical that it's so illogical the way people are feeding insulin, because that's feeding all the problems that hyperinsulinemia can cause. So what we want to do is just keep insulin working efficiently and keeping your cells receptive to insulin. So I know I'm talking like in kind of riddles, but type 2 diabetes really is prolific. In 2020, we are expecting 1 in 3 people to have diabetes of some sort. And that means their fasting levels are over 100 and they cannot maintain a postprandial, that's a blood sugar after you eat, under 120. So it's epidemiologically a problem. And this problem is going to cause a facilitated increase in aging. And that's why when I think of myself, I'm a type 1 diabetic. When I was diagnosed at 9 years old, they told me, Colette, you're probably going to live to your like 60, 65. What kind of bullshit is that? But what are they saying? It's because they didn't feel that I could ever, back in 1984, ever achieve euglycemia, which is blood sugar like yours, Trevor. You know, it's like normal person, but actually we can. And actually I've done that. I actually have better A1Cs than people that don't have diabetes. So if you can get the best A1C possible, I believe you can have life extension. And I know this to be true because there are so many type ones that have like A1Cs that are like 4.5 and below. And these people are living longer because you're not having all this glucose collecting on top of a red blood cell, damaging the very important red blood cell that requires, that supplies nutrition to every single cell in your body. So without that, you know, with damaging that red blood cell, you're damaging your whole body. So it's really simple, really.
Honestly, Colette, this is stuff no one is talking about. And people don't realize how much of an epidemic diabetes is becoming. And I only know this being in academia. If you look at an old nutrition textbook, mm-hmm. it's not called type 2 diabetes. It's called adult onset diabetes. No.
Yep.
That's the scientific term for it. They actually had to change the scientific term yep. to type 2 diabetes because now children as young as 13 are getting diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, and you know what's even more interesting? And that change, type 1 and type 2. You know, now there's type 3. Welcome up, you know, wake up. Everybody now knows that we call it type 3, and that type 3 is this whole Alzheimer concept with its diabetes in the brain. And we have type 1.5 because actually, what we have found that actually 30% of your type 2s have actually autoantibodies. So when you start seeing some kind of dysregulation, I can't tell you how many of them I've diagnosed, but I can think of like 5 bodybuilders right now that I've diagnosed that actually have latent autoimmune diabetes in the adult. And that's actually type 1.5, believe it or not. They have a slow progressing autoimmunity. Because just to clarify to everybody, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. So when I say to yourself, I have type 1, believe me, this wasn't anything I did. I'm 9 years old. I'm an innocent kid walking around like 70 pounds because without insulin, I was like a complete anorexic mess because without insulin, it's the most anabolic hormone in the human body. And if used correctly, it really is the most important, really, one of the most important, if not the most important. So when you give back insulin to me, I was able to grow and flourish and be nutrient, you know, and I was able to, you know, live a long, healthy life. But type 2 is this weird thing where it's about beta cell failure. So what are we doing to cause type 2? It's almost like a disease of lifestyle, right? Because you're seeing yourself, you know, eating a lot of, this is the diet of America, right? We're eating too many calories, too many carbohydrates, too much sugar. We're not moving enough. And you end up getting extra fat tissue on your body and the cells become resistant. Type 2 is a disease of insulin resistance, really. And then at the beginning of insulin resistance, you're seeing super high insulin levels. So you don't want your insulin levels higher than 19. So when you ever get an insulin level test, and we'll talk about tests that I think you guys all should get, you see these high insulin levels, guess what? You're on your way to diabetes, okay? You're there. You're already pre-diabetic. So high insulin levels at the beginning signal type 2 diabetes. And eventually, guess what? You're not going to make enough insulin. And you will need insulin in order to maintain euglycemia. So now talk to me about this, Trevor. So what I'm seeing in the world of bodybuilding, to make it relevant to everybody that's listening, is, and I cannot even tell you the numbers of calls. I mean, the other day I had 3 phone calls and 3 phone consults from, these are guys that are 5-6% body fat, that exercise every day, that have lived the lifestyle, that have competed on stage, and you look at them, you're like, there's no way this person fits the profile of a type 2 diabetic, because type 2 diabetic is somebody that, you know, to make a profile, you know, they're usually, you know, over 45, they're overweight, they have a history of diabetes, they have hyperlipidemia, they have high lipids, they have high blood pressure, the whole deal, and they present with high insulin levels. And that makes sense, right? They're overweight. They've been eating improperly. But how do you explain it in the bodybuilder type individual that looks like they've been doing everything right? And unfortunately, what happens, it's kind of the lifestyle that we're living as bodybuilders. We're overstressed. We're adrenal fatigued. We're taking things to stimulate our body, which Okay. Okay. Adrenaline, epinephrine types of things, like, you know, your clenbuterols, your, you know, any of your beta agonists, any of your caffeine even, and then you're taking growth hormone. I have nothing against growth hormone. In fact, I see the, you know, the benefits of it, but we have to understand everything I just mentioned is anti-insulin. All right. It's anti-insulin. And I always think of Dave, because when Dave and I would have these conversations about insulin, and everybody knows, probably, well, not everybody, but at one point in my life, I was engaged with Dave, and it was him and I would argue nutrition until the end of time. But what he realized when he was trying to grow to be 300 pounds was that there was this rate limiting step, right, in growth hormone. Like, you could go so high in growth hormone, but good luck, because it's anti-insulin. It literally shuts down your receptivity to insulin. So what are you guys thinking? If you do not take insulin with growth hormone, in my opinion, I mean, it's just science, you know, it's just science. Then you are really not getting the benefits, because, and actually getting some hazards, because you're actually causing the beta cell to produce more insulin. And everybody listening knows this. Has anybody taken growth hormone and all of a sudden they're getting hypoglycemic? And they're saying the growth hormone is causing me to get low blood sugar. No, not really. What's happening is your body is sensing the receptivity decrease, right? The growth hormone's telling the receptors, I don't know what's going on. So then your body kicks out so much insulin that you end up with low blood sugar. And if you guys are seeing that and are listening, you're on your way. You're on your way to burning out your beta cell. So the more times you have these weird hypoglycemia episodes, you've been taking growth hormone, you're doing all these stimulants, you're running around, you're stressed out, you're not sleeping, your cortisol, your adrenal fatigue, you're on your way to beta cell burnout. And that is why I believe we're seeing such an increase in bodybuilders running around with fasting blood sugars over 100 and postprandials, you know, 115, 120. These aren't bad. Your doctor will say, oh, no, you're good. Just clean up your act. It's bad. It's bad. And it's not where you're going to go in anti-aging. You know, that's for sure.
I agree with everything you said. I love the fact you brought up adrenal fatigue, because this is something I truly believe in. I wrote an in-depth, like, 20-page article on adrenal fatigue. Mm-hmm. And I can't even begin to tell you the amount of doctors and healthcare professionals who emailed me saying, this is not a thing.
Oh, I know. Yep.
And I'm like, okay, test these people's awakening cortisol levels. Like, their bodies are effed, part of my language.
Well, Trevor, what is that saying? If your cortisol levels are high, you're going to cause, again, that causes insulin resistance. Your counter-regulatories, growth hormone, cortisol, adrenaline, okay, and glucagon. Okay, those are your four deals, okay? So all these are anti-insulin, pushing the beta cell to work harder. And your beta cell, everybody, makes insulin. And eventually that beta cell will not be able to keep up. And this is why I believe we're seeing thinner type 2s in the world of type 2 diabetes, because of these types of situations. That as someone is a super healthy bodybuilder, we know, let's face it, that bodybuilding competitively, and actually sometimes the lifestyle that is actually counterintuitive to being healthy. I mean, it's just, it's crazy, but it's counterintuitive. And it's those things. And what's interesting about me, and I'm not saying anything about anything, but everybody wonders, like, I'm so hyper. I'm always like up here. And everyone's like, my God, Clint, what do you on? Like an Adderall? You on like caffeine? Trevor, I do no stimulants whatsoever. I do none. I do no stimulants. And I sleep well. I have a great rhythm to my body. It's truly because I don't have to rely on these things. And also I realized as a type 1 diabetic, it was, people are like, you're the only bodybuilder that doesn't drink coffee. It's like every time I drink coffee, Trevor, I was having to take insulin. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is crazy. Why am I needing to take insulin in order to maintain my blood sugar to drink coffee? Like, there's, so what is happening to you every time a person, so every time a person's stimulated up, their body has to produce that insulin. I'm just seeing it because I got to inject it. But my body's like yours. I just have to see what's going on because I see every insulin unit that I need to take. So it's like, there's something to that. This overstimulated body, this over cortisoled out body, the stress in the world is actually leading to this beta cell fatigue, which will lead to type 2 diabetes.
So have you read any Jason Fung books by any chance?
Which one?
Because he has a really good diabetic book out. I'm sorry? So
my diabetic Bible, and if anybody, like Dr. Bernstein. So Dr. Bernstein is a type 1 diabetic in his 90s, and he's a practicing physician, and he has it's like the diabetes solution. And a lot of diabetics, it's like, it's truly like their Bible. There's a whole thing called type 1 grit. This guy has turned, his A1C is in the fours. He turned his whole body from complete demolition from diabetes. I mean, it almost sounds fictitious because I work with diabetes every day. I'm a clinician. I see at an endo office here in New York City, diabetics all day long. And it, I just see how it ravishes the body. This guy, it was a disaster. And he believed that if you get your A1C down, like under 5, that you can heal the body. The body has an amazing ability to heal. It really does. I mean, look at people that are alcoholics and they have fatty liver one night, and then again, their livers, the regenerativeness of the body is incredible. But he ended up just with really, really strict blood sugar control and really manipulating insulin and learning about how the powers of insulin and how you need to kind of intertwangle the different types of insulins that are on the market. He's like completely complication free. This guy's unbelievable. So I don't know if anybody, I haven't read his book, but I'm just like a Bernstein lover because okay. He really is like, he's just.
So with type 2, what does Bernstein say to reverse that?
So here's the theory. And this is what's going on today is in terms of how do we prevent type 2? We get ahead of the curveball first. So, you know, you want to see where your A1C is at. So you guys, a hemoglobin A1C, go get one. I mean, a doctor will be like, you don't need an A1C. You're fine. Bullshit. Okay. My sister is perfectly fine. My sister's 110 pounds. I don't even understand this series, this scenario, right? She's waking up with a fasting. She calls me and she's like, Colette, I got a fasting sugar like 114, 110. What do you think? Do you think it's okay? It's not okay. So I have my sister on Tresiba. You know, she's on insulin. Are you kidding me? Everybody around me is on insulin actually. But, and then my brother-in-law is presenting, he's in the same deal. Athletic guy. There's nothing wrong with him and his fasting sugar is not right. So they believe in me. You got to get this blood sugar down fasting between 75 and 85. And how is the best way to do that? You use a basal insulin. It's a basal insulin. It's a 24-hour insulin. We've got some amazing insulins. I've spoken before, like gone are the days of thinking about Lantus and Levemir, although those are the premier ones. Mm. Forget about MPH. Mm. It's Tresiba and Tejeo. Those are your real marketable. It's a 36-hour and a 42-hour insulin, and they're really, really flat and predictable. The problem with insulin is not predictable. Because when you inject insulin, it's just wherever you inject it, what muscle you're injecting it to, or I mean, not you're doing it sub-Q, although you can, I've done it in your muscle.
But I mean, wait a minute, because I'm confused on this. So you're saying a type 2 diabetic should inject insulin to reverse type 2 diabetes? Well, explain that one to me.
Yeah, so here's the theory. So what they're doing in Japan, and there's the Origin trial, is they're giving a person that walks in the office, okay? And this is what I do in my clinic. I mean, I am so aggressive. I remember the one guy's telling me, Colette, I just walked in and you're like stabbing me with insulin. But, so you walk in a clinic, your A1C, okay, you guys, normal A1C should be really 5, okay? If you're 5.6, well, really 5.7 to 6.4 is pre-diabetes. So now you're already in that pre-diabetic state. What about this theory? What if you gave somebody insulin in the pre-diabetic state before they turned diabetic? Now, you're giving somebody the very thing that they always wanted to avoid when it comes to diabetes. But what you're doing is you're going to lower the insulin levels because you're giving insulin from the outside. The body then says, hell, it's helping bring down the blood sugar. Guess what happens? The beta cell gets rest. Now the beta cell can actually grow stronger. It's counterintuitive to what you guys think is when a guy takes testosterone, they're actually causing them to decrease in the body's, it's a different hormonal system. It doesn't work the way that does. And everyone's like, if you take insulin, you're going to get diabetes. When I hear that, I want to die. I really don't. I'm like, oh my God, insulin will never cause diabetes ever. It will never, ever, ever cause diabetes. What causes diabetes are the things that I just mentioned prior, right? So if you give insulin in the right dose, now, insulin, the problem with insulin is doctors don't like to use it, people abuse it, and it could kill you, okay? So it's on the number one, there's like 5 lists of drugs that nurses learn about that they say, these are the ones that are high risk. Guess what? Insulin's like at the top of that list, okay? It's like it's really the most misunderstood hormone given ever. And even the best endocrinologists like are like, well, I don't know, you know? But the ones that get it, they start their patients earlier on insulin. And then what happens is, I'm actually doing this with a guy at the gym in New York City right now. And if he was on right now, he'd get on this, he'd go, oh my gosh, she's so right. I gave him insulin 3 months. I got his fasting sugar between 75 and 85. We just decided to cut it. So we cut off his insulin and his blood sugar is completely euglycemic. He's perfect. His blood sugars are perfect. So what happens is there's a theory, and this is being done in Japan right now, is you put people on insulin for 3 months. This is pre-diabetic. You don't even have diabetes yet. You put them on insulin for like 3 months, you clean up their acts, right? Their blood sugars look perfect. And then their beta cell gets stronger. The actual cell gets rest and it becomes more vibrant. And you actually increase insulin sensitivity because the cells aren't getting this over secretion of insulin from your own body. So you actually clean up your whole body system. And then you actually see like basic normal blood sugars as a result of being on insulin for, you know, it's like a theory of like 3 to 6 months, and then you pull them. And then as soon as you see the blood sugars creep up, you put them back on, you pull them back off. And what we found in the studies is that you really never develop diabetes. But those people that didn't do that developed diabetes. The A1Cs were 6.5, okay. 7.
So can we can we kind of just jump, like, so basically you're saying if you're starting pre-diabetic, this will work, but what happens if you are type 2 diabetic?
So here you are. So we know what to do with my people that are listening, that are a lot of diabetics that come to me, that are bodybuilders, that A1Cs are, no, actually blood sugars are off. It's the early insulin initiation is critical. Everybody goes to metformin, but metformin.
But I mean, let's say it's too late and you're already diabetic. You've got like 120, 140 level. Right. So
here's what they do. This is what a doctor does. They'll put you on metformin. They'll say, guess what? Let's start with metformin, 500 milligrams twice a day. I'll see you in a week, you know, see what's going on. You'll see some difference, right? But you won't see the type of, it's like, why are we driving a Ford truck, okay, down to Florida when I'm driving the Ferrari, okay? Everybody's taking the metformin in the Ford truck. Good luck, I'll see you whenever, right? But I'm taking the Ferrari because insulin is natural. It's a natural bioidentical hormone. We DNA replicate it. It's human insulin. It works. Why wouldn't we just go in with a bang rather than go in with something like a metformin and just say, oh, I'll see you later, whatever. And then what ends up happening is metformin can only do so much. It's only working with the liver. It's telling the liver, hey, stop producing so much glucose. I'm begging you, you know, give me a second here. And it reduces some of the insulin resistance. But it never really, it gives a little bit of a rest to the beta cell, but it doesn't really completely rest it. I mean, to me, when you give metformin, here's what the metformin's deal is, right? They'll tell you it reduces the hepatic output of glucose from the liver. You heard those words, right? Well, guess what a basal insulin does, a 24-hour insulin, not the insulin that everybody uses like Novolog, Humalog, Apedra, Humalog. No. A basal insulin reduces the hepatic output of liver of glucose from the liver. It does the exact same thing as metformin. The problem is it's an injection and doctors have been programmed to go, let's go metformin and then I'll give you some Januvia and then I'll give you an SGLT2 and then I'll give you a bunch of drugs. And finally, because I'm scared to death, I'll finally give you insulin. By that time, it's too late. You've already aged your body. You've taken years off your life. You've definitely caused some calcifications in your body, massive inflammation. I mean, it, to me, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, I agree that metformin is a shitty-ass drug. But I do know people who became type 2 diabetics and got on insulin right away because they couldn't take metformin.
Metformin, yeah.
Because they had stomach problems.
That's right. So here's
and they are still diabetic. So what is their way to reverse type 2 diabetes? You're saying, I'm sorry?
Once, what happens is, once you have already diagnosed, so say you go in there, it's too late. You never did any intervention. You never did any early intervention. And you come into the doctor, you got your A1C 6.5, which means you're diagnosed, you got diabetes. It happened 10 years prior to the diagnosis. It was going on 10 years before. Okay, we know this. This is nothing I'm making. I'm not making this up. This is what we know as clinicians, right? So by the time you show up and your A1C is hot, your fasting sugar is over 126, your fasting sugar, it only takes us twice to show up and then your postprandial blood sugar is over 180. It's over. It's too late. Your beta cell has been under 10 years of stress. You're at 50% beta cell function. That's it. That is in the studies. That means you show up, you're only making 50%. I can't get that other back. It's too late. I mean, so basically in my opinion, you should be on insulin the rest of your life. You should not digress from that. You should make that your protocol. Insulin's not a big deal. And if people, I mean, listen, I'm like, this is how I treat my patients. I'm like, do not fear insulin. Fear your blood sugar. You know what I mean? It's your blood sugar that's killing you. So if the pills are like a slow way to get to, you know, the end result, why wouldn't you just take the fast way and get the most natural way and the way that doesn't have all the side effects? I mean, there are no side effects of insulin, you guys. The only side effects of insulin are low blood sugar. Okay, well, we just make sure we take the right dose and pain at the injection site and a possible allergy. And they have to put that on like every single drug label. But really, when you think about it, your type 2 diabetic would do best getting on insulin, getting the blood sugars under tight control, regulating their food always, and exercising. But once you're there, it's almost impossible to reduce, to go back, you know? Like people think, oh, I'm gonna reverse it. You can only reverse it if you catch it before your A1C is so high, like 6.5, and you intervene really aggressive in the beginning.
Saying that like Jason Fung, Dr. Jason Fung, he wrote a book on obesity, the mm-hmm. obesity code, and he says in his book that you can actually reduce. You're telling me he's wrong?
I'm not telling you he's wrong. What I'm telling you is that there's a whole theory going on now because people that are really overweight and they get bariatric surgery, they have an amazing release of something called GLP-1. And GLP-1 is like, this is actually Ozempic. Ozempic is, we make GLP-1s. Okay, we make GLP-1s because we know the power of them for weight loss and for blood sugar control. So what happens is that get this surge of GLP-1, and GLP-1 lowers glucagon. And so there's a new drug coming out soon that's a glucagon inhibitor. So you're inhibiting glucagon, and we're finding that's really effective in type 1 and type 2 diabetes, right? But here's the thing. So what you're seeing is the surge of this hormone that actually helps blood glucose control. And I'm going to say this. I'm not saying he's wrong. But what I'm going to say is that, what does he mean reversing diabetes? Okay, remember, I'm talking about fasting blood sugars between 75 and 85 and nothing really over 110. I can guarantee you, because I work with bariatric patients that claim they reversed their diabetes. They did. To the normal person, their diabetes looks good, right? So they're in that maybe 5.7 to 6.4 range. So remember, diabetes is above 6.5. So when you read that book and you really dig deep, they didn't really reverse it. They got themselves out from hell, which is maybe a 9 or an 8. I know when I'm speaking these numbers, these are high numbers that mean a 3-month average of your blood sugar, right? When these numbers are high, now they get them back to a normal level, but I'm not telling you it's ideal. It's not ideal. They're never going to be ideal. And even those patients, I would consider looking into making sure that you really see the big picture of what's going on with their blood sugar. So they reversed it to the point where to a doctor, they're very happy. You're good. You're good. And that's what the doctor will tell you.
So someone can go from like a 130 blood sugar down to like, say, 70 and they're
using insulin. You can do it. I mean, I've gotten, right. I think you can pick whatever blood sugar you want using insulin.
You
want
to hear something funny?
Mm-hmm.
Is that I did. I was 130. I was a, and now I'm 69. I just got my blood work.
Thank
Explain
you.
So that now, one.
So did you do this with diet intervention or did you use
insulin? I did fasting for the past 2 years. Okay, I didn't touch insulin.
No. And I'm not saying that that doesn't work either. What you're doing is you're mimicking what insulin sensitivity that you need in order to achieve that type of fasting blood sugar. Not a lot of people are going to do what you did though. I love intermittent fasting. I think there's a lot to it.
I did prolonged fasting, not just intermittent.
Right. And that will work because you're lowering your glycogen stores, your body's working off fat, and you're lowering your insulin levels. So you did it by basically keeping your insulin levels very low. I mean, I remember having that patient that came to me, his doctor diagnosed him with diabetes. I was like, what? Because his insulin levels were super low. I'm like, the guy's on a keto diet. He's getting ready for a competition. He does not have diabetes. You know, it was like the funniest thing. This guy, doctors are so crazy sometimes. So what you did is you used diet intervention. And I mean, I don't mean to speak against that. Now, you could have done insulin and done diet intervention. I mean, insulin would never have hurt you either way. So the thing what I'm saying is, even with you, if you are fasting sugars, I'll hear what I'm saying. This is crazy theories, you guys. I'm like a theorist on this.
No, it's not crazy theory. It's just like everyone in my family has diabetes, so I'm very knowledgeable about this, and I'm just trying to like understand like there's a difference between like bodybuilders and like normal Joes when it comes to diabetes. And I agree with you that bodybuilders fuck themselves up with diabetes. And my theory is very simple. They just overeat over the course of their life.
And they overeat to achieve, and of course some of the drug cycles that they're doing and things that they're doing as well. But for you to kind of, you know, go on to what you were saying, you did, by lowering your insulin levels and increasing your insulin sensitivity, you were able to achieve the beautiful fasting blood sugar 69, okay? Which is ideal. But what we don't always know, and you're reversing, you're giving yourself beta cell rest. So what you just did is exactly what insulin will do. It will give you beta cell rest. For those people that aren't going to be as dynamic as you, you say to yourself, well, however they're living, you know what I mean? That's what I always tell people. People like Colette, you push insulin, this is my patients. And I'm like, what about diet and exercise? I'm like, half people won't do it. I said, we're going to wait for that person to change behavior. What takes 3 months, but we can fix them. You know what I mean? I can fix their fasting sugar and then I can work on their behavioral change because I mean, I want them to lose weight. I want them to get healthy and everything else. But that takes time, you know, and you just, people like you and I have the ability to just, I'm going to do it and that's it. But what I'm saying to you is that a little bit of insulin would have never hurt you. And it wouldn't even probably hurt you now because what it's doing is just keeping your beta cell at rest. You know, it's keeping, but I mean, that being said, if you, depending how your life is, your insulin levels are so low, I don't want you to go hypoglycemic, but even if it was 2 or 3 units, you know what I mean? Like it's such a small amount of a long 24-hour insulin because you're only fasting for so many period of time. And when you're fasting, your body is still kicking out glucagon. So glucagon's going to fire because it's going to want to make sure that all your cells have enough glucose and enough energy in order to process, right? So in that nature, even though you're fasting, like they always say that with diabetes, like you should eat breakfast, right? Because if you overextend your fasting, your body's going to kick out glucose. That's what happens in the wake hormone. So like when me as a diabetic, right, I have two instances where your blood sugars go up. In the middle of the night, you have the dawn phenomenon. And that's when you have a surge of growth hormone. So you have a lot of people say, I went to bed and my blood sugar was 80 and I wake up and it's 102. I mean, what the hell is going on in the middle of the night? I'm not even eating. What's happening is you have growth hormone, and growth hormone surges between 3:30, 4:30, whatever your circadian rhythm is. That's why, you know, we know that we have that extra secretion of growth hormone in the middle of the night, why sleep is so important to grow. If you want to grow, you got to sleep. Then when you wake up, you have another surge of adrenaline, cortisol, and growth hormone to wake you up, because the body doesn't care if you have some issues with your blood sugar. So it wakes you up and it kicks out all these anti-insulin hormones. And there you go. Your body's working harder again, just by pure, just nature of life, you know? So that's where the idea of using insulin at a small, very small fractional amount, or depending on where you're at in the world of dysregulation of sugar, it's not a bad thing. It's really not a bad thing.
So this is a question. I know Trevor wants to jump in, but I got to ask you this, because I don't know the answer to this. Yeah. I haven't really researched this, but I know some people, a lot of people actually, that have diabetes, type 2, and it's like one day they were okay, and it's like, boom, the next day, type 2 diabetic. What happened there?
So listen, remember what I said. It is 10 years in the making. It does not happen overnight. All of a sudden, it's the straw that broke the camel's back, right?
So they had it going, they just didn't know it.
And you don't see it. Listen, if all you were testing is your fasting sugar, you think you're good. So many people like that. They're like, oh, my sugar was, 90, 88, that they think this is okay, or 100 or 101. What is happening postprandial? What are happening when they have that extra carbohydrate meal? They don't see it, you know? So nowadays, you guys, you can get CGM. You can get continuous glucose monitoring. You can get a Freestyle Libre, stick it on your arm. You can get a Dexcom, stick it on your leg. And you can see your blood sugar for 24 hours. It is amazing what you can learn. And I put it on so many guys. You have no idea. I'm like, just put this on. I want to see this. And they're like, holy shit, Colette. I didn't know this was happening in the middle of the night. I didn't know this was happening at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So you think you're good, because if you get labs done by your doctor, he'll just look at it and go, yeah, you're fine. Oh, did you eat something you shouldn't have? They dismiss it. Diabetes is misdiagnosed on so many levels. And then it's just like, oh, come back in 3 months, you're good. Right now, it's the time to intervene. You know, either do what you were doing, like get on a person's ass and say, okay, listen, lower those insulin levels, low carb diet, intermittent fasting or extended fasting, do whatever you need to do to lower your insulin levels to give your beta cell rest. All I'm asking people to do is give their beta cell rest. But really the only way to do that is doing what you're doing, because even extreme exercise. So here's the deal. I got to take insulin before I squat, deadlift, do any, I got to take insulin. My blood sugar goes up because I have such a cortisol stress release. So even exercise to that extent can screw up the beta cell. The only thing that really like lowers your blood sugar better than anything else is freaking walking. I mean, ask anybody that's diabetic. If you just casual walk because it's like, it's depressing. I'm talking like 3.0. You're not even killing yourself. That will lower your blood sugar better than anything else on the planet, because it's just relaxing and you're just kind of utilizing glucose, because it's slow, you know, cardio. It's not really.
I agree 110% with that. And I tell people all the time who have that, who are overweight, you can't exercise yourself away, because I see people in the gym all the time on the elliptical for an hour every day and they're still fat. And it's like, you're not going to be able to exercise your way out of it. And what's funny is Americans, I don't know if you're American too, Colleen, but Colette, but Americans exercise more than any other country. And we're still the fattest. So that's kind of weird. That's kind of weird. Trevor, go ahead. I know you want to jump.
Yeah.
So Colette, I had about 10 listener questions.
Oh, really?
They basically all summarize the same question.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a epidemic with bubble guts in bodybuilding, growth hormone gut, steroid gut, whatever you want to call it, right? So what they want to know is, one, is insulin what is causing these guts? And then two, if you're going to be using insulin daily as you've recommended before, would that cause an increase in your midsection?
Yeah, it can, and if it's not utilized correctly. Okay, so I utilize insulin in a very, very proficient way, much like how I use it. So the way bodybuilders are using it now, let's think about this, okay? It's a yes and no question, okay? I mean, the answer is a yes and a no, okay? So there's definitely a contribution from insulin and growth hormone use and this extended gut, right? But it's a lot about food, okay? So let's talk about food for a second. Okay, in order to get to be 300 pounds, or in order to grow, we got to eat, okay? So we're flooding our body with carbohydrates, right? So here's what people do. I'm going to take 100 grams of carbohydrates, slam down 10 units of insulin, and then, wow, if 100's good, I'm going to take 150, slam down 15 units of insulin, because, I mean, if a little bit's good, more is better. You guys, this is feeding the insulin. It's feeding the problem. It's feeding this hyperinsulinemic state, and insulin does not discriminate, you guys. Yes, you'll pull some in the glycogen, but your muscle cells can, you know, can store maybe 400 grams of glycogen, okay? And then your liver maybe 100, okay? So eventually you're gonna tap those things out, and then you're gonna store fat. So now you're creating hyperlipidemia, all these extra lipids, okay? Then you're taking growth hormone, right? And growth hormone's gonna stimulate IGF-1. You have IGF-1 receptors in your stomach. So really, it's a growth hormone. I mean, and I hate to say this, insulin's a growth hormone. And a lot of insulin increases IGF-1. So yes, I mean, this can all happen, you know, because you're creating like different growth factors, and then you're extending your gut. You're living like that. Your stomach's constantly extended. And we know the relationship between insulin and IGF-1 and growth hormone and IGF-1. And this is where I feel like that's the relevance in what we're seeing, because it's not just some like, maybe this is, there's an absolute relationship. I mean, there has to be. We didn't see this before insulin and growth hormone. So for us to say, well, no, that's not what it is. It is, but it's a combination of just this extended eating, you know, this heavy eating and how you're taking the insulin. So my theory is, now listen, I've been taking my insulin my whole life. I don't have one of those, you know? So it's not necessarily going to happen. Okay. So it's how much we're doing and how we're thinking about insulin. Whenever I speak to people about insulin, I don't want you to feed it. Okay. Here, Trevor, hear me out. We want to avoid these growth guts. Okay. So we don't need to feed the insulin. You do not need 100 grams of carbs, or worse, 200, whatever, taking 15, 20 units, 30 units of insulin after a meal. We just don't need to do it. You need to figure out your plan, okay? And you just don't want to live with this distension all day long, right? So really just figure out your diet. However you did your diet before you decided you were going to take insulin. I don't know. However you can figure. You're working with whoever you want to work with, okay? And then there's really no need to say, I'm going to just take this superfluous amount of insulin and it's that maximum time right after I work out. That's the answer. What I believe is small, more frequent dosing. It doesn't matter what you're eating. If you're eating protein and vegetables, 40% of the protein is going to convert. You could take 2 to 3 units. I have a guy that does a keto diet, takes 2 to 3 units at every single meal. He looks phenomenal. He's lean, super healthy. A1C is, I mean, the guy is amazing. And he's grown every year, like 10 to 12 pounds. I mean, without a growth guy, it's just because it's small, more frequent dosing. It's a little more tedious. I mean, but you really don't need to be taking more than, I mean, so say you did 50, 60 grams of carbs after a meal, you know? I mean, 5, 6 units. I mean, at the most, if you needed to do, if you really were a big guy and you needed to do 100, that's 10 units. I mean, that's it, man. Because you start feeding that insulin, you're going to feed a lot of problems. You're going to feed hyperlipidemia. So now you're going to, cholesterol, lipids are going to be more screwed up, even though steroids do that too. Your blood sugars are going to be more screwed up. And this is what I think we're seeing is people like, well, I've been doing insulin. My blood sugars were still screwed up. Well, yeah, you did it wrong though. First off, you're just feeding this, all this insulin at twice a day. You know what I mean? At a crazy amount. So you're actually causing some of this insulin resistance by doing insulin that way, you know, rather than saying, I'm just going to take smaller amounts and be more euglycemic. I'm not going to flood my body with sugar. Like, I don't even understand why people want to do that. I never did post-workout sugar. I never did it. I never believed in it. I mean, people yell at me and think I'm crazy, but it's just not necessary. You just don't need that much.
It's because they read some Celtic ads.
Exactly. I mean, they believe that shit. You know what I mean? I can't even tell you. I was always, when I was doing bodybuilding, I went against the grain on so many things. Even against the grain when Dave and I would argue. I'm like, you don't need to do that. I mean, you just don't need that. You don't need to do those things. It's just not.
I agree for sure. But what about those few instances where people like fell asleep and they went into a coma and stuff? Is that just a bad accident or?
I mean, here's the thing. It's how much are they, did they?
Colette, I'll answer that for you.
Thank you.
Steve, there is over 1 million Americans self-diagnosing insulin every single day. It is not near as dangerous of a drug as people make it seem.
I agree.
More people die every day from air conditioners falling out of windowsills than from insulin.
Coconuts.
Trevor, it's an interesting point, you guys. Do you know that it takes a ridiculous amount of insulin to kill yourself? I know a guy the other day that took 1 ml. He thought that was 10 units. 100 units. He's fine. He's absolutely fine. He ate a couple bagels. The guy is fine. Your body has amazing counter-regulatory. I love the movies where you could die from taking insulin. It really does take a tremendous amount of insulin to kill somebody. And even with the basal insulin, even a more ridiculous amount. So because your body has counter-regulatory hormones, your body has the ability to kick out glucagon and kill out the glycogen and keep you alive. Faced with a situation where you took too much insulin. So, I mean, I remember that whole thing. They thought they theorized that with Dallas, but it wasn't that. You know what I mean? It wasn't the insulin. It was not the insulin. I mean, you can get low blood sugar. You absolutely can get low blood sugar. You're very aware of it when it happens. I mean, you know what to do. And actually, your body will save you. When I was competing, a great story, Dave was like, I was so maniacal on my diet. I would sit at blood sugars at 40. He's like, why don't you just take a glucose tab? I'm like, I'm not doing it. My sugar will go up. And funny enough, it would. I mean, I was kind of miserable for a few, like an hour or something. And then all of a sudden I would test my sugar. I'm like 65. Your body kicks out glucagon, you know? So, I mean, I get mad at my patients all the time because they're like, my blood sugar was low. And then they eat a bunch of shit. And then it's 300. And I'm like, I know it feels shitty. Take a glucose tab and chill out. You know what I mean? Stop eating the refrigerator. Because once you do that, you're going to be on the roller coaster of hell, you know? So it really, like you said, I mean, this whole thing, if you really think about insulin and you just think about how it works and you think about kind of what I'm saying, that you don't need to feed it. And once you start feeding it, that's where the problems come in.
So Colette, a lot of our listeners are like that in shape, type 2 diabetic.
You know,
not all of our listeners are bodybuilders, but they're right. All athletes of some sort, you know, whether they're doing CrossFit, triathletes, whatever, right? Most of them are also using performance enhancing drugs, particularly things like growth hormone. Yeah. I want to know specifically, who do you think should be using insulin?
Okay, so I want everybody out there, you can get a meter called, I don't know, put this up sometime on your website, Relion. R-E-L-I-O-N, okay? Relion. It's cheap. It's the cheapest meter on the market and it works. It's the same glucose technology. You don't need anything fancy. Okay, everyone goes out and buys a fancy meter and spends $100 on strips. You buy the meter for 10 bucks. Okay, everybody should buy it. Go on, buy. I'm not endorsing this. I just say it's just cheap. Okay. And you get strips. You get 100 strips for $17. Okay. That's nothing. Okay. That's nothing. Otherwise, you're going to spend an arm and a leg on a bullshit meter that does the same thing this one does. Test your fasting sugar. I want everybody to do this. I want them to email you, Trevor. Email me. Let's find out where everybody's at, because this is where I found so many people. Fasting sugars, anything over 100 is called impaired glucose tolerance. Stop living in the dream that it was something I ate last night or I don't know what I was doing. I mean, it's impaired glucose tolerance. I'm sorry. That's not good. So at that point, if I had a person that had impaired glucose tolerance, I don't care how fit they were, what they were doing, because I did this to my sister. So this is how much I believe in this, you know? You start on a basal insulin. You go in head first and you fix that fasting sugar as fast as possible. You get that fasting sugar between 75 and 85. So I strongly believe in that. That's where you make the biggest intervention. That's where you can save. And these people, it's not an issue of they're too fat or they did this or they did their lifestyle, you know, just the nature of whatever they were doing in their life, stress hormones that were released during exercise, the growth hormone they were taking, whatever the reasons, okay? There's so many different reasons that can cause beta cell failure. That's where you should intervene. And that's where you can save. And this is in the literature. This is being done. You can spare the beta cell from failing. Because if you don't, you're on your way. That's where this is in the first year of the 10 years before they're going to be diagnosed with diabetes. If we can get it now, we could prevent the beta cell from failing. And this is where we're at right now. This is why we're changing the way we treat diabetes and how we look at a patient. It's about beta cell preservation, not just about the big picture. You know, it's really getting deep into that little scope of what the beta cell is doing and preserving it.
And those strips, I just want to clarify, those strips, how long do you have to fast before you test yourself?
Good. About 8 hours. Give yourself about 8 hours of fasting.
So just in the morning when you wake up?
Yep. First thing when you wake up.
Okay. And you're licking the strip or what? You're peeing on it? What?
You're just putting in a blood sugar meter. It's just a strip that turns on the meter. And it's a simple like little finger stick and you test your blood sugar.
Okay. That's so it. You're using your blood. Okay. I just want to make sure.
Yep.
Okay. So Colette, I really want to make this, I really want to give our listeners some golden nuggets here. So someone goes out, they buy this blood glucose monitor. Let's say they do this 2 days in a row just to make sure they didn't screw it up. So they fast 8 hours overnight. They test their blood sugar. They do it twice. they get the same reading each time, you know, roughly speaking. At what blood glucose level should they start using insulin? And what specifically should they do?
Okay, so if you're fasting blood sugar, you really, in the literature, if you have two fasting blood sugars over 126, you have diabetes. Okay, so everybody listen to what I'm saying. Two. Now, if you had two fasting sugars over 100, doctors will be like, you know, you might want to test for a week, okay? Just to see if there's any, because meters themselves are not perfect, okay? There's a 20 to 30% differential. So now if you're seeing over 126, they say, well, listen, by the time the meter's diagnosing you at that, something's going on, okay? But if you're at that 100, maybe you're really, you know, 95 or 92, things might not be great, but let's get a really bigger scope. Give me 5 days. Give me 5 days of fasting sugars and let me see where you're at. If you see that you're over that 100 and you're consistently over 100, we should intervene. If you're over 126, you absolutely, but this is me being strong and me being passionate about this. You might need insulin, a long acting insulin, and then you might need insulin at each meal. Okay. Because you can't maintain the normal rhythm of the body. The rhythm of the body, you need a 24-hour release of insulin, and then you need insulin at each meal to spike. You see what I'm saying? So it's the flat line with the peaks, okay? So if you're already at 126, you already got diabetes. It's not a good situation. So you wanna fix that and as soon as you can. Now that's not saying, I know that our friend over here had a 130, and at that point I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, my mind's freaking out. If you catch it early enough, you can, there's that point of reversal to some extent, okay? If you catch it early enough, but I don't even know, in talking to, what's his name? Our other Trevor, what's our other guy, our co-host Steve. Name? Steve, I love you, Steve. I'm the worst with names.
Okay? It's on the, it's up
Steve,
there.
Steve, I could know you forever and I'll be like, Steve, okay.
You can just call him dickhead.
Steve. So yeah, right? So Steve, if you were 130, and you did it on two occasions, I'd be like, oh my God. You know, I would be probably like insane and been like, you know, forget about this fasting. Let's just go in and then get you off of it. You know, you might not need it forever, right? Because you've got this militant attitude, but fix the situation earlier. So if you catch it as early as possible, you can go in and save that beta cell. But if you wait too long, and this is what doctors are doing, they're giving you metformin and a bunch of bullshit. It's just carrying you to a self-destruction. I mean, the beta cell just doesn't have enough rest, and then it'll eventually say, I'm done. You know, I can't keep up with the demand. So early lifestyle intervention, yes. But in thinking about where you want to go in terms of how aggressive you want to be, I mean, when you're over 100, you could intervene. If you want to be that, you know, cause and effect and say, you know what? Yes, you could say to yourself, I'm going to do what our friend, you know, Steve did. Fasting, low carb diet, but they're not going to some people just don't do it, you know, or it doesn't work. You know, I mean, I could say this too, Trevor, I could say, you know what? You got a fasting sugar over 100, cut your carbs, decide. You don't have to go on a straight keto diet, but you go on a less aggressive, you know, maybe, you know, 40, 40, 30. And if you can't do that, then you stay keto, but then that's your reservation. That's you forever, man. Because the minute you get off of that, your fasting sugar's up again. So I'm a person that thinks, get aggressive, get that beta cell complete rest, completely rest that beta cell, and then see if you can get off of it in 3 months and then work on that lifestyle intervention, you know, and see how long you can maintain normal sugar. We don't know because we wouldn't really have an idea. Like you can get your insulin levels tested. You can get your C-peptide, and C-peptide is showing how much insulin you're making. So these are levels that you should get done and see kind of where you're at, but a lot of them still have some discrepancy. So I mean, insulin levels change all the time. So it depends on when you get your insulin levels done, even though most of the tests are fasting. I mean, it's again, what you're seeing through that meter every day, what's going on, the logicality of what's happening before you eat, what's happening after you eat. Another thing you should do with these people, test before they eat, test 90 minutes after. Are you staying within a 10 to 15 standard deviation? That means if you went in and you were 85, you should not be over 100. And if you are, that's not really normal. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously maybe it's something you ate and that's why these foods are killing us, but it's something that you got to think it. You got to reel it in then. You got to reel it in. Why isn't your body able to stay in the numbers that it should, in its ideal range?
So I just want to like make sure, like, let's back up to the beginning because I kind of want to learn a little bit, pick your brain on foods.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, you're on the verge of type 2 diabetes and what are foods that, you know, are going to push you over the top? Like, what are the worst offenders that kind of caused that?
I truly believe, and I want to write a book, because I'm not a person that believes in keto. I think it's too high. And listen, I love everybody out there. I'm not saying it's all what you want to do. So it's not, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying I look at the entire balance of a diet that can kind of prevent diabetes. Now, a keto diet absolutely lowers your, I mean, there's no question. It lowers your, but I don't want to put coconut oil in my coffee. I don't want to eat all that fat because you're missing something. Micronutrients from your vegetables, and you're missing a lot of fiber. Two very important entities that actually help with diabetes as well, right? So I'm like thinking, you know, I don't want to go keto. I never really liked to eat 70% of my diet fat, 20% and like no carbs at all. I mean, yes, it can work on an insulin level, but I'm thinking just, you know, what you're really missing. It's too extreme. Then you don't want to do these carb diets. I mean, I don't eat oatmeal. I don't eat rice. I don't eat potatoes. I don't eat bread. It's just, you just don't need them. Okay. You don't need them. I mean, your bodies need protein and fat to grow and build muscle. And you need just enough glycogen to supply for maybe your workouts or whatever you're doing. Otherwise your body, it's that macronutrient is like kind of dispensable. You know, you don't really need it. Right. So, but going extreme, then you're going to miss out on the micronutrients of vegetables and you're going to miss out on the fiber. So then you kind of need to throw that in there. Right. So my kind of theory is I kind of took a paleo approach with fiber and added in a few little extras that kept with me when I see it, because I know how much insulin I have to take, which kept my blood sugar really solid. And I didn't have to take as much insulin in order to keep my blood sugar at a normal level. So vegetables, yes. So all your vegetables, obviously not carrots, peas, corn, those are starchy vegetables, right? So all your vegetables were good, right? And a cup of vegetables is 10 grams of carbs. So say I do 2 cups of vegetables, that's 20 grams right there. So if I did 2 cups of vegetables at 3 meals, 20, 40, 60, okay? I'm already at 60 grams. So for people to say, okay, you're going to go on a real keto diet, now you're not even getting any of those micronutrients. And those 20 grams of vegetables barely touch my blood sugar, okay? Then I do beans. So the paleo diet doesn't do beans. I mean, I know they're like so anti-bean, okay? Legumes like the worst thing ever. But legumes are very interesting in the fact that I don't eat fruit. So if I don't eat fruit, then I don't get a lot of potassium. But there's a shitload of potassium in your beans. So beans are giving me a shitload of fiber. I'm getting 8 to 12 grams, depending on the bean. It's actually a whole food. You know, you're getting protein. You're getting some carbohydrates. You are, but you're getting a lot of fiber. So that fiber kind of negates, you know, you kind of do the whole thing. You subtract the fiber from the total carbs. You're not really getting a lot of carbs. It doesn't really affect my blood sugar. So I like to have them a lot. You're getting, you know, just a ton of nutrition out of them. So I'll do like an omelet in the morning with some black beans and like a salad, you know, like a little side salad. It's one of my favorite restaurants in New York that does that for me. Then I might throw in, you can see where the carbs are going to add up. So I probably average around 125 to maybe 100 and maybe at the 50 grams of carbs, because it's just extraneous carbs that might be.
Right. But I'm talking about like, can you kind of nail like specific foods? I'll give you an example. Like you mentioned fruit. My question is like, okay, let's say Cheerios, right, has a glycemic load of like 65 and watermelon has a glycemic load of 4. So,
sugar. See, glycemic index isn't always the perfect means of saying.
Yeah, explain that. Yeah.
Yeah. So glycemic index is very controversial. Okay, because.
No. Load. Did I say index? I meant load. Glycemic load.
Even but so, like, it's sugar. So whatever you're getting out of watermelon, even though it's fructose, because fructose is a very interesting sugar, it's absorbed through diffusion, so it doesn't act as fast on blood sugar, but it's sugar. You know what I mean? I always tell people, it's like, people want to, I don't know. I feel that sugar.
But I mean, Cheerios doesn't have much sugar. It has less sugar than watermelon, but still the glycemic load is higher. Can you square that and make me understand?
Because carbohydrates turn into glucose in the body, and it's at whatever step and rate. There's not that much fiber in Cheerios. So it hits the system, turns into glucose very, very fast. So any fruit may not, some of the fruits obviously are faster than others, but a fruit will always be lower on the glycemic load than a Cheerios or white bread or a potato.
So you're saying like a watermelon, you know, a small amount will spike your blood sugar as much as Cheerios? Or I'm not following.
I know it's tricky. I will say no, but I will say that it's still sugar. And what fructose sugar does to the body is sinister, because it doesn't have the same glycemic load. But fruit, I mean, eventually I want to do a master's thesis on fruit, okay? Not to eat it, okay? People want to like kill me when I talk. This is like, people want to like really just start emailing me. You're crazy. But fructose is a sugar. Like when you eat it, okay, when you ingest it, it actually increases your triglycerides at that moment. So I know this because I would do that. I would do phlebotomy. I take the person's blood and I'm like, why is your triglycerides through the roof? And it's, they either ate a piece of fruit or they drank juice and didn't think that mattered. You know what I mean? Will that really count? You know, I thought that was fat, you know? And then you saw the immediate change in the triglycerides when you eat fructose. Like fructose is just a bad sugar in general. I mean, that's why when people eat agave is 100% fructose. And that is like really bad for you. I mean, there's a great guy. I can't think of the podcast on this.
Colette, I'll back you up here.
Yeah.
What's fascinating about fructose is that it can only be metabolized by the liver.
Yep.
So because it goes straight to your liver, it doesn't raise blood sugar levels. We actually, at the beginning, when fructose was first being discovered that it's metabolized by the liver, we thought it was great because it's like, whoa. Right,
this is
the sugar that doesn't raise blood sugar levels. But the problem is it goes straight to your liver, right? Your liver is a small organ. Your liver has a glycogen storage capacity of only about 50 grams. Once your liver's glycogen is full, any additional fructose is going to immediately be stored as fat.
That's right.
So that's the big problem.
You're with me on this. I mean, it's not just the ideal, you know, scenario, really, in terms of exactly by the main point with fructose being not an ideal sugar in the body. And that's my opinion. You seem to be with me a little bit on that. I mean, I know the micronutrients are there, the antioxidants are there, but to me, the sugar's there. So it's like getting across the river to the pot of gold, but going through a bunch of alligators, you know?
And my thoughts on fruit is, like, I agree with you completely about fructose. I would never recommend consuming high fructose corn syrup, sugar, fruit juice, things like that. But if you're eating whole fruit, like let's say you're eating a cup of blueberries, that's only going to have about like 4 grams of fructose. So it's like not really
enough. I agree with you. That's why berries are on that like okay list. You know what I mean? Like even when I talk to patients, I'm like, listen, if you're going to do anything, blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, or blackberries, you know, it doesn't have that profound effect like the other fruits. But by that same notion, if I eat an apple, I got to take insulin. So I mean, it raises your blood sugar. You know, fruit still raises. I mean, not to the level that, like, we were talking about Cheerios. I mean, there's nothing worse. I mean, you have a bowl of cornflakes, you're in trouble. I'm taking like 15 units of insulin. But when I still have fruit, it's not like it's free. You know what I mean? It's not like I can say, I'm going to have a piece of fruit and I'm good. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I still count. If I'm, you know, if the fruit has 15 grams of sugar, I mean, I'm going to take 1.5 or 2 units of insulin. So it's not.
But I mean, here's the thing. Is there a website or a graph that I can actually look at? Because this is the frustrating part to me, is that the glycemic load of watermelon and oranges is like 3 or 4. And then, like you said, Cheerios is sky high, cornflakes is sky high. But people are on the assumption that Cheerios is okay because it doesn't have as much sugar as watermelon. I know. So is there a website that people can actually go to? Because you're saying the glycemic low is bullshit. So is there, what is the way we can find out besides experimenting and jabbing our finger every time we eat something?
I mean, I think in that notion, like what you're saying is we just have certain value to certain foods, right? And I tell people that you look at the fiber. How do you make a carbohydrate okay? To simplify this as much as you can without worrying about a chart, because all we have is glycemic index and glycemic load, which aren't terrible. It's just, I'll argue the fruit concept. What if you think about just when I look at a carbohydrate, because I mean, I have to look at and think about how much insulin I need to take for every carbohydrate I eat. And that's what you need to think about, right? That's what I'm trying to spare everybody, is to stop the glycemic load on the body so the body doesn't need to produce all this insulin. So if the fiber is over 6, you know what I mean? I'm looking for things that I eat that the fiber is over 6. So that cuts out oatmeal, because oatmeal only has 4. You know what I mean? That cuts out whole wheat bread. That only has maybe 3 or 4, maybe less, actually. The whole wheat breads on the market are just white bread with a little wheat sprinkled in them. But so let's just say you try to make a whole wheat bread. It still won't make it. It'll be like a rock if you don't add white flour. Cheerios, there's nothing. I mean, like Fiber One cereal has its decency, but it still has more sugar in it than I like. Because they hide some sugar in with the fiber. So you gotta be kind of a detective. You wanna keep the sugar low, you know, less than 1 gram or none, and you wanna keep the fiber high. And that's where I go in with the beans. You know, that's where I go in sometimes with a low carb wrap or a coconut wrap, or use almond flour, or you use things that have such an abundance of fiber and they have very little sugar, and they don't cause much of a load on the body at all, because that fiber isn't really absorbed, you know? So, and it buffers the blood sugar. So it's kind of a nice, gentle flow in the body, and your body doesn't have to overproduce all this insulin. because that's what's happening when you're eating something like a Cheerios. It can't figure it out. So 9 times out of 10, it just produces too much insulin. And there you go again with the idea that the body is just keeps pushing out all this insulin time and time again. Eventually, it's going to increase the aging process because you're not going to be able to maintain normal blood sugars. Even though
where can people go to see what you're saying about the fiber ratio and all this stuff? Is there a website that actually tells you, hey, these foods are going to spike your blood sugar, these foods won't? Is there a website that actually does that? Because I'm amazed that I can't find a website that does that.
I know. The very interesting thing is, I was sitting with a doctor in Brooklyn. He actually has an entire book that he's writing on the whole concept. And him and I were just bullshitting. And we're talking about, obviously he believes in a low carb diet, but his whole concept was really focused on fiber and how a fiber, it's like negative carbohydrate units, he calls it. How can we increase weight loss by using really a higher, and that's, I really think that's how I've oftentimes kept control of my weight. And I don't do any cardio. I don't even know how I do it actually, because I mean, it's really because my diet is so high in fiber, very low in sugar. I mean, if any sugar, like I just don't eat it. I don't eat fruit. So I mean, really not getting any sugar. And obviously everything in your body, I mean, even protein, you guys, about 40% of the protein we eat converts to sugar. That's why I taught people when they carb count, you gotta include protein in this. Because that's not free. It just takes a bit longer for it to turn into glucose. And what the body needs at that time, you know, because your body only needs a certain amount of protein at all times. And the rest of it's going to be stored as fat or as, glycogen. So it's really, there's this, I don't know when this will come out, but he is working on this. It's basically a negative carbohydrate book. And basically what he's talking about is how increasing the fiber in your carbohydrates can decrease the load on the body, facilitate weight loss, lower insulin levels, and gives you a little bit more of a variety of foods, and it makes more sense out of what you can eat and what you can't eat. And I'll tell you right now, there are no cereals on there. There's no like processed foods. I mean, they're just never going to be on that list, you know, because it's just, those things are just bread, rice, potatoes, pasta, you know, to some extent, corn, peas, carrots. I mean, these things just, they're sugar. They raise your blood sugar. You know, they're starches. They do what they do in the body. You know, a white potato, my God, if I eat that, it's over. You know, my blood sugars are going through the roof. And it seems so healthy, right? Seems so healthy, but not to my blood sugar.
Well, if you look at the American food pyramid, that's what they're telling you health is.
I know. What did we do in the 80s when we turned the coin to, like, remember the Susan Powder days? Like, we had an increase in high fructose corn syrup, and we had this whole fat-free craze, and everyone was eating sugar, and all we did was just fast forward the clock to where we are today, where diabetes is an epidemic, you know? And now we've turned the page, and now we're making fat okay. And fat is okay. I mean, fat is more than okay. And it's just a shame that we still are caught up in that fat-free, you know? That's just not where we're at.
The good news is we made a lot of corn farmers very rich.
That's sweet.
So Colette, this is a very, very interesting episode. I mean, you dropped so much information. I mean, I'm going to have to listen to this episode a couple of times so that I'll soak in. For our listeners, if they want to learn more about insulin, learn more about maybe some of the articles you've written, maybe contact you for help with their insulin, contact you to hire you, what would be the best way for them to contact you?
So I have a Facebook, okay, so Colette Nelson, and then I have my email, which is probably the best. I'm like so old school, I really am, is my name. So it's Coletti, so it's Coletty at msn.com, and I still have ColetteNelson.com. So everything's on ColetteNelson.com, my entire like history, life, everything I've ever done. And then there's all my contacts right on my website, how to get me through Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and everything. So really, I encourage you. I love this. This is what I love doing. And I really want to save people from what I have to go through as a type one. You never want to have a beta cell that doesn't work. I promise you that.
Colette, do you want me to put your email directly in the show notes?
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, thank you. That'd be great.
Okay. I'll have her email directly in the show notes. So that's the easiest way. That's direct access to her. You don't have to go on her website. You don't have to go on her Instagram. You don't have to send her a DM. You got
that's so
straight
much work.
Access.
We don't do that. That's way too much work, right?
So Colette, I really appreciate you coming on. Very, very interesting episode. And this is stuff no one is talking about. So hopefully this episode really got our listeners to think outside the box.
Yeah, definitely. I hope so. And listen, really feel free to contact me at any time.
I want to
talk a little bit. Just one day we should just do a real quick episode of like an insulin update. Like literally just for people that are interested in what's the new basal insulins, the new rapid acting insulin, inhaled insulin. See, I mean, I don't know if your listeners care, but I think there's enough interest in it. You know, I think bodybuilders are always curious, or your listeners are curious as to what's, I'll give you the latest and greatest of what's out there.
Colette, you have my word. We will do that either next week or the week after.
Yeah, I won't be long-winded. I'll get right down to that.
For your host, Trevor Kuritson, for my co-host, Steve Smeet, and for our special guest, IFBB Pro Colette Nelson, this is another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.